The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Good afternoon. We're on Man in Line, open line through till one today. Call 66 13 68 for whatever's on your mind. Lots of comment last week. We were talking about the prevalence of motorhomes, camper vans, whatever you want to call them, on the Isle of Man. And a note in from Alan, who said, as a former motorhome owner, I followed UK and international motorcycle races. And I disagree with some of your listeners who say that motorhomers bring all their food with them. I mean, if you're coming for 2 weeks, you can't store everything. So due to limited storage and weight restrictions, it's not the case. People who arrive in motorhomes will buy local. They'll buy from local shops. Thank you for that, Alan. And thanks also to Dave T said, is it not a medical epidemic when Manx Care says that STDs on the Isle of Man go up by 80% each TT week? This is a staggering revelation when you factor the TT is an annual event. How can the population sustain that level of STD infection? I'm not being facetious. It's a real concern and something the public should take responsibility for. Thank you, Dave. That was Manx Care who mentioned that sexually transmitted diseases went up, or the reporting of them went up by 80% following TT. Certainly a big concern, and I've no doubt the medical fraternity is looking at it, but it is a big concern, and certainly the prevalence of certain STDs on the Isle of Man has caused concern in various age groups as well. But certainly we'll keep an eye on that. Thanks for raising that, Dave. And Wilf's with us first today. Hi, Wilf.
Andy, I haven't been on lately because I haven't been very well, but then that's beside the point. It comes with the territory at my age. What was I going to ask? Oh, yes. Howard was on Friday, and he mentioned that the new boat had 900 passengers on board. And it's just a question I was for the steam packet. Has that boat got life-saving gear for 900 passengers?
Well, I think they must have, really, because they wouldn't get a ticket otherwise. They've got no boats.
Well, I don't know, because I don't know who issues the tickets.
Well, they've got no boats. Well, what they've got is these things, these kind of chutes, these big slides that come out of the side, and you rocket down these slides and go into the boats there.
I can understand that, but fancy trying to get somebody in a wheelchair down one of the slides.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
No, that's a very important... the thing is that if you're young and able, that's fine, but if you're, you know, if you're of a certain
age... you'd enjoy it if you're young and able.
Yes. And certain children as well, for that matter.
I think I'd probably enjoy it myself now, but there it is.
So, that's...
But I can remember in Ramsey, the steam packet boats coming... many, many years ago into Ramsey, into the Channel, with 1,000 passengers on board, which were visitors. And I thought, even then, I was only a kid then, I thought, I don't know, you're going to get all those people in them rafts and lifeboats then, you know. It's just a thought.
I'm trying to remember, how many did lifeboats used to hold in those days? Was it about 30, 40?
Oh, yeah, at least. I've actually got one of those old lifeboats falling to bits in my yard here. And, they had ropes along the side as well. People could hang on the side of them.
Right.
And without getting inside, you know. They get to fill them up. I don't know. I've forgotten how many now. It's actually stamped on it what it is, but I can't see it from here.
Right.
How many it will carry. I thought it was about 70.
Oh, right.
But then people can hang on the side as well.
Wilf, how did you end up with a lifeboat?
It was in the gasworks yard. And It was sitting there with about a 3 foot hole in it. Apart from that, it was in good condition. And I got a mate of mine, because I said, what are you going to do with that? Just smash it up, he said, with the digger. So I said, well, that's a shame. So I got my mate, and they got it craned on, and he fetched it here in the yard, and that's where it sat ever since. And I patched a hole up and everything. And it's a long story, but I patched a hole up and everything. Got it all sorted out. Had a big engine here, which is still here, and gearbox and everything ready to put in it. And then somebody came in the yard and sold me another boat. It's as simple as that, you see. So I bought the other boat, and this one just lay here till it fell to bits.
Okay.
Or it fallen to bits.
So it's now in...
That's what happens
it's
here.
Now, it's now
in... Things go slow with me.
It's now in Wolf's Museum, is that right?
Well, what it was, they had it, apparently, even with the hole in. They used to tow it round on a trailer for the... up and down, and you know, throw money in it.
Yeah, yeah.
For the lifeboat.
Yeah, to collect, yeah, yeah.
You know.
Good.
But there we are.
All right, well, good to hear from you, and get...
I'm a mine of information.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. Okay. Continue with the recuperation.
Okay.
Good to hear from you.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Now, 13 minutes past 12. Julian's on now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. Yeah, let's hope there's no EV fires on the boat when you've got 900 on.
No.
I noticed that the... The Porsche Taycan, the one that was implicated in the Felicity Ace car carrier boat that went down off the Azores a few years ago, Porsche has recalled 27,000 of them due to battery fire worries.
Oh,
so there's
grief.
A bit of a worry there.
Well, no, it's funny. Somebody brought that up the other day as to, but presumably the steam packet have got mitigation procedures in place to do for something like that. I just wonder where they put electric vehicles, one particular end of the boat or in any particular area.
Yeah, because otherwise it's sardines. And I think apart from a blanket, which doesn't really stop the torch 2,700 degree Celsius flamethrower going downwards underneath the car.
Well, that's the whole issue, isn't it?
It's
the downward thrust of any flames that will be the issue.
Yeah, yeah, the venting ports are underneath the car, so, the recent letter from our Chief Constable, Russ Foster, expressing his doubts over the upcoming 20-mile-an-hour zone rollouts across the island. He said in the letter, and I quote, "The statistical evidence provided does not demonstrate that a reduction of speed limits on 30-mile-an-hour roads would have any impact on reducing the number of people killed or seriously injured on our roads." This raises a couple of questions. For a start, is Michelle Hayward pushing this, or is it a civil servant that's pushing this? You've also got the Isle of Man Road Traffic Regulation Act, which is still in force from 1985, Section 23, subsection 2, general speed limits. It states that the department, which would be the DOI, because they do change the name sometimes, may, after consultation with the chief constable, by order, increase, reduce, or abolish the speed limit. However, he's not giving his wish for it, is he? So, should the public adopt Michelle Hayward's stance on consultations with things like our planning applications or income tax assessments, Andy? I mean, if she's going to ignore what the Chief Constable's saying, should we ignore what the government tell us to do?
Well, I mean, bearing in mind that what the Chief Constable's opinion at the moment, you can bet your bottom dollar that there's some backroom negotiations going on here, because I'm presuming, I don't want to speak on behalf of the Chief Constable, but I would imagine he's saying, well, who's going to enforce this? Because if they weren't asked before it, and if they suddenly say, by the way, we've got this new law, Mr. Foster, over to you, I can imagine the sort of response that would come out. Because, you know, if they weren't consulted, who's going to enforce it? And if nobody's going to enforce it, what's the point of the law?
Well, it may be that our Chief Constable knows one of the actual reasons why Wales abandoned its 20-mile-an-hour rollout. And it was because the research had already been done and shown that only using signage doesn't work. and it's just an expensive waste of money. And even though the rollout cost Wales, for example, $35 million to install, experts had already warned that to properly roll out a functioning 20-mile-an-hour system, it would cost at least $350 million, or 10 times the cost of signage only. That's primarily due to all the extensive civil engineering that's required to change road designs, so speed bumps, narrowing lanes, chicanes, and varying the road texture. And even when all this is done, the experts warn that emergency service response times are adversely affected. Because you can imagine, if you've got an ambulance or a heavily laden fire vehicle full of water, or the police vans, they've got to slow down for the inhibiting road furniture.
Yeah. I mean, and particularly if you look at, and I was paying close attention the other day, I was walking along Douglas Promenade, and bearing in mind it's really busy because it's TT. Now, I think probably less than 50% of people were doing 20 miles per hour. Where they could, most people, I guarantee, were doing well over 20 miles per hour. And certainly out of hours, out of busy hours, nobody does 20 miles per hour on Douglas Promenade. And that's supposed to be, you know, the showpiece. So if they can't, you know, if they can't enforce what's happening on Douglas Promenade, how are they going to do it elsewhere, let alone in built-up conurbations in housing estates?
Well, I was walking past Beach Road in Port St Mary yesterday, and the buses flew past me, at least 35, and that's supposed to be a new 20.
Yeah.
Now, some of these experts are saying that this signage only causes irritation and increased mental load as people try to drive in what is a speed limit that feels unnatural because it hasn't had all the bits that make it narrower, etc. A study from the UK National Institute for Health and Care Research found that poorly implemented 20-mile-an-hour signage-only zones in a one-size-fits-all approach, which is kind of like the Isle of Man is doing, caused 12% more pollution caused by stop-start driving from poor traffic flow, more high-speed accidents as people put their foot down on distributor roads to try and make up the time. Other negative impacts included damage to local businesses like driving schools, delivery services, social care visitors. And only a week or two ago, a BBC News report titled Canterbury Shop Owners Lament Footfall Drop, with rollouts of 20-mile-an-hour zones in pedestrianised areas destroying local businesses as shoppers seek easier-to-access locations elsewhere. And I've got another question, Andy.
Yeah.
The original proposer, I remember, of some 20-mile-an-hour rollouts was Anne Corlett.
It was.
But did she envisage that the DOI minister would carpet the whole of Douglas, Onchan and other towns and villages on the island in 20-mile-an-hour speed limits? I mean, I don't know if you've seen that Mangis map from the Isle of Man government. I mean, Douglas is literally a spider's web with a green bit round the outside. The whole thing's red.
Anne Corlett was bothered about the area. I live around the area that she was talking about in Douglas Central, used to be Douglas West, around Ballabruey, and it was around the schools, because you've obviously got Ballacameen, big high school in Upper Douglas there, and there are housing estates all the way around it. And a lot of those housing estates people used to cut through from Quarterbridge Road into Central Douglas. And Anne Corlett was worried about the schools. And that was the whole ethos. That was the thrust of 20 is plenty. It wasn't to stop people, to stop everybody driving at 20 miles an hour. It was making sure around the schools and in the housing estates, 20 was plenty. That was her pitch.
Yeah, and you know what? Everyone respects, like, QH School or Arbury, you know, your dynamic little 20-mile-an-hour yellow flashing things at the times when the schools are going in and out. Everyone respects that. It's not a problem. But we're sort of going backwards. I mean, you know, if you look at roads, if you look at the pedestrian safety features that you've got on cars now, I mean, for the last 10 years, a lot of cars have got cross-traffic alert with braking. So, you know, the cameras and the radars and things, they're looking for pedestrians, auto braking, in case you haven't noticed.
Yeah.
It just seems with all these new things that are going on, I mean, what is the purpose of this? Is it just to fleece the motorist? You know, there's lots of reports in Wales that older drivers that had had a clean license all their life were suddenly getting nailed for doing 24 in what was, you know, they'd spent their whole life doing 30 in. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Appreciate it, Julian. Thanks for calling today.
Thanks, Andy. Cheers.
22 minutes past 12. David's with us now. Hi, David.
Hi, Andy. Well, Ogden's made the first. I've witnessed the pole going in, two poles in Hilby Road, near where I live, for 20 miles an hour. I've been told they're 20 mile an hour poles. They're going in, and I can't believe from the minister there how she's treating the population when the consultation hasn't even finished.
Do you think, is this Michelle Haywood, or is this the civil service? Is it somebody or some people within DOI? Bearing in mind, we've had Michelle Haywood, Tim Crookle had a bash at infrastructure, Mr. Cannon took over, there was Chris Thomas, Ray Harmer, Tim Baker, they've all had a go at it. So surely, is this the department, or is this the politician, do you think?
No, I think it's directly the politician. I'm not for certain on that. Because, like I said to you, we had a private meeting, and I'm not telling things out of school, with the minister some time ago in Onken, and she never mentioned the 20-mile-an-hour zones in Onken at all. But the following day, she mentioned this is going to happen in Douglas and Onken. And we weren't consulted on it at all. And she's had to backtrack on that. And my concern is now, they're putting the poles in, because I've been told they are 20 miles an hour poles, right near where the T-junctions where I live. There, I've seen them this morning. There, the lads are working there, doing this. I don't know how far they're going, but my concern is too that are people having consultation on other things at the minute, which are, and in my view is, and I'm sold with it all the time now. Coming down the White Bridge, the 20 mile an hour should start as you come up the rise there.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, on Signpost Corner, the 20 mile an hour should start there and not when you're halfway down Hilbury Road where the boys are putting the signs in there now. But it makes me wonder, why do we bother? And really, at the end of the day, who can we complain to if consultation is not taking place? Or do we have to wait to the election and just get rid of half of them?
Well, the thing is, and you raise an important point, and that is consultation. Because if the government, in all seriousness, is saying, we want your opinion, surely they should wait until they've had our opinion.
Yeah. And I remember years ago, and Bruce Haney, I hope he's listening sometime, Bruce Haney always said to me when I was in the DOI, he said, unless you get the buy-in from services, which was like the police and other agencies, legislation is not worth a carrot. So the same thing is there with the chief constable. A, he wasn't consulted on it, and B, he has reservations on it, and C is, who's going to sit there all day and with a speed gun? We don't even have speed guns, do we? I've not seen a speed gun or a police officer or a car lying anywhere. The only thing we've seen, and I haven't seen it lately there, is the number plate recognition.
Yeah.
And we've got a full set then in Ogden, haven't we?
Okay.
Anyway,
all right.
Let's see what and you'll get a picture later on today.
Oh.
I won't do it in front of the boys. I said to them, no, I'm not doing it in front of you lot. It'll only want to be like stars. But I believe we are the first. And I want to see if anybody else, including Douglas, are they going to say they were the first? But I think we were the first, and that was about 11 o'clock today.
All right.
Okay.
Good to hear from you. Thanks for that.
Goodbye.
Cheers now. 26 minutes past 12. If you want to see these plans showing the proposed changes to speed limits in Douglas and Onken, they're available to view now. You can see them at Onken Commissioner's Office, Onken Library, Douglas City Hall, Henry Bloom Noble Library, a.k.a. Douglas City Library, and the Sea Terminal. The plans are going to be available until Friday, the 4th of July, enabling a full and extended consultation with the local community. That's you. Feedback should be provided to tro@gov.im. Just nip along. You can see the actual exhibition and see what it is that they're proposing in the future, and where 20 miles per hour will be the limit. Somebody dropped a note in and just said that all our 40,000, 50,000 visitors must be giggling. Well, we've got people racing around at 200 miles an hour, that we're proposing 20 miles per hour. How do people ride motorcycles at 20 miles per hour? Is it difficult? And Vince dropped that note in regarding civil servants and just said, this 20 mile per hour limit, bearing in mind that Michelle Hayward's only been in that position less than, what, 6 months or so? Surely this must have been dreamt up before. And as it doesn't seem to be, well, let me just say candidly and kindly that being the minister at the Department for Infrastructure doesn't seem to be a job for life. Who dreamt this up? And whose intent that it is coming in? Because it seems to be coming in. Unless you may be no different. Text, email, call and WhatsApp. Stephen's with us now. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Andy, and good afternoon, listeners. I wonder, Andy, could I just ask, through the good medium of Manx Radio, when will the organisers of this TT finally accept that this race schedule is not conducive to anybody? I've spoken to many marshals who say that it's almost like a full-time job. The shopkeepers do not like it. It means that their normal customers cannot circulate the island, and nor can the fans come and shop in the shops. We've got peel day today down here, and it's very, very quiet. The buses were doing a very busy time taking people out of Peel. We're in competition also with Port Erin day today, and the new race schedule is not conducive to anybody. When will the organisers accept that it's not? Or is it the fact that certain sections of Manx society have to just put up with it? And it's ironic that a few weeks ago, the Department for Enterprise were trying to come up with schemes to get people into our shops. And yet, here we've got a schedule that takes people out of the shops and doesn't even give anybody a bite of the cherry. There's every likelihood of the second contingency day this week, Thursday, when that would be Mardi Doo Day in Peel, will also possibly be used. So, Andy, it is not conducive to a good section of island life, and I do hope that this message goes back to the race organisers and they say, let's call it a day and change it back to what it used to be.
Right. So, I mean, obviously, Peel Day's on till 5 o'clock today, so hopefully there will be some sort of trade getting to Peel, but it's quiet at the moment, you say?
Oh, very quiet. I've just been speaking to the clerk who Deal Town Commissioners, they did write in when the new schedule was done about the lack of this would cause lack of tourists for Peel shops, and it's no different on this occasion. The promenade is very quiet at the moment. It started at 12, and it's just a complete disaster. And yet we're expected to put up with it.
Well,
and the race, I believe that the organisers is it ever registered for them that this is not conducive to a big section of island life?
Well, I don't think.
Does anybody report their problems, Andy?
That's an interesting.
No one ever comes along and says,
"Yeah, that's
how did it go for you?"
Yeah, no, that's a very interesting point as to, I just wonder, how do you square this particular circle, though, Stephen? How do you make sure that this actually works for everybody? Because presumably...
You go back to the old schedule.
Oh, I see.
We go back to the old schedule. It's I believe they've done that for Grand Prix, if you look at it. That's virtually gone back to what it used to be. But for this, it hasn't, because they all come in at the weekends. Now, what's the point of it? The carrier does well. I'm sure that the public houses will do it in the evening time. But the shopkeepers are not getting a fair crack of this whip. And you've got all the disruption, very little of benefit. So it doesn't help. And I do feel the Department for Enterprise and the tourist members should go round and speak to people and ask, how did you do? Was it successful?
Right. Okay. All right, Stephen.
There's no end result to this.
All right. We appreciate it. Thanks for calling today.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you. The government have got those roadshows on. So this may be one of the things that we can, if you feel that way, you can go and talk to them about. It's at the end of this month, Monday 30th, Tuesday 1st, Wednesday 2nd, Thursday 3rd. Mondays at Ramsey, Tuesday at Ballacameen in Douglas, Wednesday at Castle Rushen, and Thursday at QE2 in Peel. The government are doing that Listening to You roadshow. If you're in business, and particularly if you're in retail, I just wonder, how are things going at the moment? Lots of people around. Have they got enough time to get to you, I wonder? Geoffrey joins us now. Hello, Geoffrey.
Hi, Andy. I agree what's been said so far with everybody about 20 mile an hour speed limit. What I can't get through is why is the government continually allowing this to go on, the signpost going up? I mean, some of the signposts where it says 60 in Glen Helen and 60 at the top, you're going down a hill. There's no way you can do 60 miles an hour down there. I am lost to see why the government isn't standing up and saying enough's enough until we get a feedback. And the feedback's going to come back with people want them by the schools and they want them near a hospital where it's a problem. But I think my personal opinion is that it'll make no difference. She'll go ahead and do it and then we'll be suffering like Wales. But Wales at the moment are now clamping down on it now. They're taking a lot of it away now. So why are we allowing this lady to continue doing what she's doing without the government stepping in, putting the brakes on and wait and see what comes out of it? She's continuing all the time. And I feel she's not interested. This will be a lip service. And she'll continue to say that the people living down my road want a 20-mile-an-hour limit.
The thing is that regarding the 20-mile-per-hour limit, it's all very well having the 20-mile-per-hour limit, but if somebody goes over the 20-mile-per-hour limit, then what? Then what's going to happen if somebody happens to go over the 20-mile? You know, who's going to register? Who's going to, you know, to measure their speed? Who's going to serve them with a ticket? If there's going to be no sanction for it, why do it?
Well, she said in the last interview by you, I believe, or in the early morning interview, that it's down to the police. That's what she said. I'm only implementing, it's down to the police to continue it.
Yeah.
And I feel then, what happens then is we're going down the road like the UK. You're backing up with the drivers. You know, this is an island. We are a caring island. We believe in each other. We help each other. We're not part of the UK. So why is she going to the UK to find out? Why don't she trust the people of the island? I want to know the figures of speeding all year. Yes, there is always somebody somewhere doing something stupid. But on the whole, the Isle of Man is very good. The drivers are very good. I'm sitting on Douglas Prom now. I'm not on my motorbike today. And I can't see anybody. They're all travelling along here. There's not a queue. They're all doing a slow speed. And I've been on my bike and found the same thing with the cars and the motorbikes. You've got the odd person always. And I think it's wrong that she's taking this attitude that all the car drivers on this island need to either change to an EV or the old people get off the road altogether. I think if the government don't step in, come the next election, nobody will be in the government. We're all a new bunch of people. But we've got to get rid of this wokeness in the government backbenchers, the ones that are pulling the strings. We need to get rid of these people. This island is a Christian island. People believe in the island. That's why it's so good. That's all I've got to say. I've done my soapbox argument.
Appreciate it. All right, Geoffrey, thanks for calling today.
Okay, bye-bye.
24 minutes before one. Our liberties are being stripped. Just a thought. Maybe it's time to open our eyes regarding this. The 20-mile-per-hour excuse gives powers to the powers that be. Full control, surveillance over the population. We do not stand under tyranny, so we should stand together for our rights. Yeah, our rights instead of being subjected to their wrongs, says CC. It's a 20-mile-per-hour limit. Michelle Haywood is just a spokesperson for the DOI. She may sign things off as a minister, but Andrea said, this is Andrea 538, says, decisions regarding speed limits will have been made by somebody in the DOI. Now, remember, the chief exec, or the chief officer, as they are now, is Emily Kerfey. Her deputy is Mr. Robinson, Jeffrey Robinson. So who's deciding this? Whose idea is, bearing in mind there have been many, many DOI ministers over the past few years, who decided this? Now, a good point that somebody mentioned earlier on, that Anne Corlett wanted 20 is plenty. That was part of her manifesto. For Douglas Central, she wanted 20 mile per hour limits around the housing estate around Douglas, and particularly around Ballacameen High School. It now seems to have gone elsewhere. We've also heard driving instructors, driving test invigilators saying it's not possible to test how somebody can drive if they're only driving at 30 miles per hour. Who is it, do you think, whose idea this is? Obviously, Michelle Haywood is subject to a public vote if she chooses to stand next year. What do you think? Text, email, call and WhatsApp. Oh, and also this subject about the family library going. You heard Joni Farragher saying nobody's got a bad word for the family library. If that is the case, why is it going? Well, we know they're running out of money, but why have they been allowed to run out of money if everybody likes the family library and it does a good job? Why is it under threat?
There's never been a better time to buy your new Yamaha. Direct from H&H Motorcycles, South Key Industrial Estate, Douglas. Or online at hnhmotorcycles.im. With great deals across the Yamaha range and an exclusive offer to H&H Motorcycles of a contribution to your riding gear. Plus, find many more top brands from RST, RaceFX Enduro and Alpine Stars to Arai, AGV, Motul and more. With island-wide delivery available. See what's in store at hnhmotorcycles.im. Motorcycles.im.
Ramsey, Douglas, Castletown and Peel. The Ferry Bridge and Laxey Wheel. Point of air to the sound of man. Explore the island with Camperman. Whether it's an island staycation, a trip to the UK or a tour of Europe, do it in style with Camperman Luxury Motorhome Hire. Fabulous accommodation, the open road and stunning views await you. Start planning your dream adventure. Call Camperman Luxury Motorhome Hire now on 30 40 87 or find us on Facebook.
Fill up, fuel up this TT at EBF service stations. We have everything to keep you going, from a great choice of hot and cold food to chilled wine and beers, barbecue and camping equipment, plus a great range of TT merchandise, including earpiece radios. Locations island-wide. So fill up, fuel up with Ellen Vanin Fuels. Stocks and offers may vary between locations.
Did you hear?
Hear what?
Skipton International has a fixed rate bond at 4.4%.
Oh, really? That's a strong return. How does it work?
Skipton International's based in Guernsey, and with £100,000 or more deposit, you can lock in that great rate, fixed until 31st of March 2026.
Sounds like a smart move. I'll check it out.
For details on all of Skipton's savings products, call 01481 730 730 or visit skiptoninternational.com today. Skipton International is licensed to take deposits by the GFSC and is a participant in the Guernsey Banking Deposit Compensation Scheme. See dcs.gg.
A few May Tynwald leftovers on the agenda this week. Some conflicting views on the 20-mile-an-hour zones proposed for the island. What was Anne Corlett looking for when she first raised the subject in Tynwald? DOI Minister Michelle Haywood MHK offered a consultation olive branch which some members were loath to accept. And how an innocent little question on economic growth developed into a full-blown warts-and-all debate. That's agenda this evening at 5:30pm on Manx Radio with me, Phil Gorn. No angsty engine revving on this week's show, just a gentle tour through the speed limit question.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Fast to mind, 19 minutes before one on Manx Radio, and a note in from Christine who said, Andy, we had a 20 mile per hour speed limit in Laxey for years. It wasn't policed, cars still whiz through Laxey. It doesn't work. The only thing that slows people in Laxey are cars parked either side of the road. If 20 miles per hour goes ahead, I'm going to stand at the next election and get on getting rid of the 20 mile per hour limit, says Pete. Well, it's a political ambition, and I always applaud political ambitions. 20 mile per hour speed limit in Wales hasn't been abandoned, said Richard. Last year, 85,000 drivers were prosecuted for exceeding the 20-mile-per-hour limit in Wales, mostly by the Welsh Constabulary. That's an awful lot, as if some say it's been abandoned. In Wales, the collision rate has dropped last year, 2024, by 25%. In 2025, it's approaching a third safer. I don't think it's going to be reversed. So the Welsh government, facts are, and I think that's 25% less children being hurt or killed. That's worth it. Maybe some should think how they would tell a child's parents if a child died riding their bicycle because the driver wanted to go 30 instead of 20. Remember, a simple fact, five more in 100 would live after a collision with a car at 30 if they were only driving a fraction slower at 20 miles. I think we got that, Dick. Thanks for that. Stephen is right. The 6 race days is far too much. Let's go back to 4 race days or even 3 as it used to be. The disruption to the island life is too much now, and we end up potentially having to close roads for 8 days. What do you feel about it at the moment? Obviously, it's going on at the moment, but I just wonder how you feel this TT has gone. I went to a pub before the TT for tea. Very nice it was too. I went to the same pub last week. Every food item had increased under the label of TT menu. This is gouging, 475 says. I'm pretty sure prices won't come down after TT. Well, we'll be watching, won't we? Regarding the family library and the fact that it is under threat, it's been announced it's got a pending closure at the end of July. We've heard of a number of attempts and suggestions to keep the charity going. For charity it is. The directors say the facility, the family library, is no longer financially viable, and it's set to shut its doors at the end of July. DESC, Department of Education, Sport and Culture, has already said it's unable to offer additional financial support. Douglas East MHK Joni Farragher will bring a motion to Tynwald later this month calling on the Council of Ministers to step in and bring forward a sustainable funding proposal to secure the family library's long-term future.
Yeah, so this is something that I've had so much correspondence about, so many emails, and I'm sure every MHK must have had as well. It is not just a place that people go to get books. You know, it's a place that people have used. I personally used it as a child, and it was a huge impact in my life. It was not just a place that I went to get books at all. You know, it's somewhere that, you know, social skills and literacy are developed. It's somewhere that, you know, as a new parent going there, when I used it, it was somewhere where I could sort of get some headspace. You know, it wasn't any expectation that you would spend a whole load of money. It was a warm space. You know, there's just so many things that the family library provides.
There has been, of course, funding support for the family library going back the last few years. So this would be on top of what it's already been receiving. Are you proposing that £100,000 that they're losing each year is what is added on top of that?
My motion actually just calls for the Council of Ministers to come up with a sustainable funding, as well as obviously to take these urgent steps to prevent the closure. But so I'm not going to suggest a solution to them. I'm asking them to explore all options. I'm fairly confident that the family library themselves will have some ideas of what can be done, that there might be something worked out with Douglas Council. There might, you know, whatever it is that happens, as long as it works with family library, as long as it keeps that library open, keeps those services open for the people of the island, you know, that's what I want them to explore.
Joni Farragher, MHK, and I just wonder if you've used the family library, its services, its get-togethers, also the mobile library. What do you think about this? £100,000, equivalent to £2,000 a week. It's not chicken feed, but, you know, we're not talking about the Liverpool landing stage, are we, in terms of cost? Any thoughts on it? Text, email, call and WhatsApp. WhatsApp is 166177, as is the text. Call 661368. Email studio at manxradio.com. John's with us now. Hi, John.
Hi, Andy. There's a rumour going around that this woman has ordered 50,000
red flags so we can go back to where we were in the start, where a man had to walk in front of motor vehicles with a red flag. That'll be our next step.
So what do we do from here?
Well, I just wonder, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what her background is, but what makes her suddenly an expert on road safety, traffic, or anything? I mean, there's so many people like the chief constable, the test centre, the chief driving examiner and all, but all of a sudden this woman seems to know everything about road safety. It just strikes me as if she's got a little bee in her bonnet and she's trying to force this through onto everybody. And, you know, it is a bit annoying that somebody suddenly pops up from nowhere and suddenly thinks she's an expert.
Well, she's a democratically elected politician. She's been chosen as a minister. This is obviously something that her department want to do. So she's doing her job.
Yeah, but what makes her... She may be... I mean, it's like all these MHKs and ministers. They suddenly get into a job and all of a sudden overnight they're an expert. You know, and then they try to sort of force their opinions onto the rest of us. It just, you know, you don't mind listening to an expert and their opinion, but when somebody just comes up from nowhere, suddenly becomes elected and suddenly becomes an expert, you know.
Now, you've mentioned in the past the difficulty of testing somebody for driving skills going at only 20 miles per hour. But, I mean, apart from the fact that a lot of cars don't do very well at 20 miles per hour all the time, I mean...
Well, it's not that they don't do well, but you don't get out of second gear.
Yeah. So, I mean, if there is a compelling argument for road safety, would you accept that?
Accept what?
If there is a compelling argument that putting a 20-mile-per-hour limit would decrease the number of accidents or injuries or deaths.
I don't think so. There was an old story once that if people ignored a 30-mile-an-hour speed limit, but they didn't ignore a 40, where you got some places where there's a 40-mile-an-hour speed limit, they were more inclined to stick to a 40 than they were to a 30. And I don't think, not many people are going to stick to a 20, let's face it. And I can't see the police, I can't see the chief constable putting policemen out in the number it will require to rectify the manpower necessary to enforce this is going to be unbelievable.
And that's
it?
The point that obviously nobody's put this into the constabulary budget, and nobody's told the chief constable about this. So obviously he's looking after his and the constabulary's interests in that. You know, they've got other things to do. Nobody
exactly.
told them they've got to police a 20-mile-per-hour limit over. I mean, if it's Douglas and Onchan, I mean, Douglas, Onchan and Braddon is 40% of the population of the Isle of Man. It's enormous.
Yeah. It's now, I just think she's got a bee in her bonnet, and you worry a bit what she's going to come up with next.
Okay, well, we wait, we watch and we see. Thanks for calling, John.
Okay. Bye now.
Good to hear from you. Chris Thomas was a former DOI minister. And Chris Thomas is on Man in Line a week on Friday the 13th. He was infrastructure, he was also policy and reform, now on the back benches. So it'll be interesting to see what Chris Thomas thinks of this 20-mile-per-hour limit and whether or not he thinks it can actually be enforced. And also a little insight into how DOI works. Because obviously DOI were the people who did the promenade in Douglas. DOI were the people who negotiated for the Liverpool landing stage. That's Chris Thomas, a week on Friday 13th on Man in Line. You can talk to him. And before that, next Tuesday, a week tomorrow, the Manx Care's medical director, Chris Stockport, Dr. Chris Stockport, is on. He's the responsible officer for the Isle of Man's medical profession, ensuring high-quality clinical practice and delivery. And obviously, assessment, diagnosis, treatment and outcome are very important. Often they're a matter of life and death. So at the sharp end, when interventions can sometimes be crucial, how does it work? Chris Stockport, Dr. Chris Stockport, Manx Care's medical director, is on Man in Line a week tomorrow, and a week on Friday, Chris Thomas, MHK. So if you want to speak to those politicians, remember, and this government initiative, Listening to You, was on last year, you can talk to them about anything. They're going to be there. The politicians will be listening to you at roadshows. Could be taxation, travel, mental health, immigration, to some of the topics brought up last year. And it's the end of June to the beginning of July. And if you want more information, go to manxradio.com, click on the news tab, and then find that story. There's also a link to sign up for tickets at manxradio.com. Doors open at 5:15, events start at 5:30, and wrap up for 8. Each venue is accessible with on-site car parking. So Monday, 30th of June, Ramsey Grammar School. Tuesday, 1st, Ballacameen High School, Douglas. Wednesday, 2nd, Castle Rushen High School, Castletown. Thursday, 3rd, QE2 High School in Peel. And they'd like you to go and have your say. And it would be good if you could. The way the Isle of Man looks and what we do about it is important. This Destination First Board was set up to look for ways to improve how the Isle of Man presents itself for both visitors and residents. Remember, one of the members, Ranald Caldwell, has been on Man in Line when he was at Visit Isle of Man. But the historian and filmmaker Charles Gard has been a vocal critic of some of the issues that they've highlighted. The way the island looks. Obviously, there are many visitors at the moment, and they'll be looking at the Isle of Man, sometimes with completely fresh eyes, often with the benefit of perspective of coming over here for 10, 20 years. This is what Charles Gard has had to say about how we look.
The discussions we're having here today are discussions we've heard again and again and again and again. And I made a couple of videos pointing that out. And I think it's because of that I was punished by being put on this committee as a people's champion. And what I've discovered is that we talk a lot and gradually things are getting done. But as you said to me when you were a minister years ago, there's no point in dumping piles more work on the civil servants. They're only ordinary people and they'll, you know, get crushed under it. So you can only do so much at a time. But with Ranald and the team here, I mean, Ranald is an absolute live wire. And he also was horrified by the state of Derby Castle. The road here, it's got this coal tarmac on it. And you, as a former DOI minister, must know that now you're not allowed to touch that. But since 2023, the DOI have been saying how they're going to deal with it, or promising that they'll tell us. And even the minister's been asking, and it's still here. So it's things like that. When you sit on a committee, I'm not a minister, I'm not a civil servant, it can be very frustrating. What I'd like to do is have a hit committee, a hit squad that just went round and we just painted those railings. We didn't ask anyone, we didn't whinge about it, we just did it, like beach buddies do. That's really what we need. And let's get on with it.
Charles Gard talking about what we need to do and how we need to do it for smartening up the Isle of Man. Got any thoughts on that? Text, email, call and WhatsApp. Out of hours, of course, the answer phone's on 682631. Or you can email maninline@manxradio.com. Thank you, Linda 379. She said, we've had a 20 mph for years at Ormley Rees Moor in Ramsey. The amount of post office and delivery drivers use like a racetrack. They're in a hurry to finish on time. Post office, take note, she says. They stop at each door, get back and get back in at the next door, says Linda. 20 mph. How do we approach this? And is it just a matter of fact it's going to happen? Thanks also to Elizabeth, who dropped me a note. Elizabeth said, you haven't talked at all about this adult learning disability report that's been out. Well, it was a report commissioned by Manx Care pointing to a lack of strategic direction, poor living conditions, and the care that is often far from person-centred. Thank you, Elizabeth. I'm glad you raised that. I've actually been reading that report, and we'll talk about that later on this week. In fact, if you have any points to raise regarding this adult learning disability report, it looks at ALDS and found the current residential care model is outdated, overly reliant on institutional settings, and in many cases fails to meet the basic principles of modern inclusive care. It's a very comprehensive report, and it doesn't make particularly pleasant reading. Anyway, more on that as we go through the week. That's it. Back with an open line tomorrow. Thanks to Chris on the phones today. WINT